Welcome to the Repair Ed podcast, where we reflect on education and reimagine equitable futures. I'm Claire Neves, a researcher who worked in education in the city of Bristol in the southwest of England for over 15 years. In each episode, I'll talk to educators and thinkers about current injustices in our schooling system and their ideas for creating fairer educational futures. This podcast forms part of Repair Ed, a five-year project funded by UKRI to examine educational inequality in Bristol's primary schools. Welcome to another episode of the Repair Ed podcast. My guest today is Meg from The Rise, which is the Radical Youth Space for Educations. Hi, Meg.
Hi.
Can you start off by telling us a bit about The Rise and how you got involved?
Yeah, for sure. So like you said, it's Radical Youth Space for Educations, and we try and do what it says on the tin. Mm-hmm. And it's a project which I guess came out of a few of us coming together, deciding that a place where we could be doing radical education as young people, for young people, especially that was rooted in community and also rooted in internationalism as an mm-hmm. idea, was really missing. And we also wanted to have a project that was really challenging mainstream education and the miseducation that we're put through. A lot of us had been part of different political movements, and we kind of felt that there was a lot missing in terms of opportunities to come together and really learn from each other and what was happening in across different areas mm-hmm. of the movement. And it also felt essential to have somewhere that was, I guess, like trying to build up as an institution, like something that's going to be mm. able to last, as a really to kind of, I guess, hold things together as we keep learning and growing.
And what about, I love that it's educations and not education. Can you say a bit about that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that one of the big critiques that we have of school and mainstream mm-hmm. education is that it's very universal, like there's one truth, there's one right answer. And so when we're doing education, we're really trying to understand that there's multiple things that can be true at once. Mm-hmm. Also, there's multiple ways to learn things, and that actually that's sometimes the most effective way of really understanding something, is to be able to approach it from different angles, do things different ways, different things work for different people, different things work in different situations. Sometimes you learn best by being at a demonstration, sometimes you learn best by having an emotional conversation with your mate, sometimes you learn best by reading from a book from someone who's done loads of stuff in the past. So I think, and I think something that maybe I should have said in response to the previous question as well, is that really like what The Rise is about is like trying to do education that's gonna help us solve the problems that we feel like we're facing mm. in our community, and also like as a generation. And like the tagline that we've used is like a home for our generation to learn the art of disobedience. Mm. And I think that idea of like being somewhere that we can be learning the skills, the ideas, getting like resourced in different ways mm-hmm. to try and solve the problems that we face, to, you know, do great. Some disobedience.
Yeah, great. Thank you. So one of the reasons we were really excited about talking to you is that you've got first-hand experience of challenging mainstream schooling. Can you share a little bit about what the problems are with mainstream schooling? Because we've sort of talked about them quite a bit on this podcast, actually, in various different ways. And we've looked at sort of the issues in schools and how inequalities persist in schools. But yeah, from your experience, what are the issues?
That's a big question. I guess there's different ways of breaking it down. And one of the ways that we've broken it down before is in the kind of like the way that it treats, or more accurately, mistreats young people. Mm-hmm. The way that it operates systemically, on like what role does it play in the political systems that mm-hmm. we exist in, both in like our own country, but also globally. And then also how does school fit in the like context of like right now, and the fact that we see young people need to be, we're inheriting a world where we need to do stuff radically differently mm-hmm. and how does school support, or more accurately, not support that. So I feel like maybe the thing in terms of like mistreatment is something that lots of people who are listening to this will be familiar with, so I don't need to go into lots of the ways that school totally fucks up young people and doesn't care for them as full human beings a lot of the time. And I think, but yeah, in terms of those other two points, I think that we really look at school like as a political actor, and I think a lot of the time people are encouraged to not like to see school as apolitical.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's really not, even in lots of, I think increasingly, but in a lot of, when I first got involved in politics, I felt like lots of people on the left weren't talking about school as a political thing. They were just like, oh, well, of course, exams are a bit too much or whatever. But it wasn't like, actually, what role is this playing? In the same way that people might look at the role that the media is playing or stuff like that. What is it actually doing systemically? And I think that a lot of that, like, sent me personally and a few of us into a lot of research, a lot of understanding, like, the origins of mass schooling. Not only in this country in the way that it's really tied to the Industrial Revolution and getting people into the factories, and there's lots of parallels between like factory bells and school bells and all of that, but also the way that it was exported across the world, like the Western schooling system was exported across the world and used really explicitly to like violently separate young people from their communities, to indoctrinate people into Western supremacy and capitalism. And I mean, there's loads more. There's a really good documentary called Schooling the World, which was really impactful for us, I think, when you can just find it on YouTube, so anyone who's listening should have a look. But
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then the last thing I think we just talk about a lot is how much school, basically all of the skills and all the things people need to be able to create change, think differently, challenge, like, the way the world is, are so stamped out in our school system that when we're young people who are talking about, wow, we need the world to be a different place, we need the world to be a better place, what's in the way? And people often look at, oh, the way the police are in the way of this thing, or, oh, the way the law is in the way of this thing, or whatever. But actually, if you look at the fact that, like, the vast majority of every generation is going through a system that's, like, killing their curiosity, killing their ability to work together as a team, pitting them against each other, making them accept authority, killing their critical thinking, that is like, that's such an enemy of change. Like, school is an enemy of change is one of the ways that we talk about it.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's a really, really succinct way of putting it to say, like, education is a political actor. And I think we've talked on the podcast before about politics in education and, like, how teachers have been told they need to be apolitical, and the challenges that brings when trying to talk about justice in the classroom. We had a classroom teacher talking about that and how she talks to her year six class about ideas of justice. But I think we've kind of focused less on how education is in itself a political actor. And you're absolutely right, we all just take that for granted. Like, when the left talk about education, they talk about things like, we need more funding for education. They don't talk about fundamentally changing education. And I wanted to come back to you talked a lot about the ways in which the world needs to change, and your generation are focusing on the ways in which you can change, because change is needed. So I know it may seem obvious, but what are some of those changes that are needed?
Well, lots. I think mainly when I'm saying that, I'm kind of coming from a perspective of, like, both that literally I guess I feel like I was brought up into a world where there was a level of violence and disrepair in communities, people in themselves, and then obviously on a, like, global level as well, that was totally normalized. And I think part of me saying that is, like, a rejection of this idea that, like, there has to be this level of violence in the world. And I think a lot of what I've come to understand, and I think that as a project we talk about, is, like, imperialism as the one of the root ways of understanding a lot of the violence in the world. And so I think there's that. I think there's the inheriting of that world and looking at that and being like, actually, a lot of the things that I've been told to see as normal here actually really don't feel right. And then I think another part of it, which is hugely linked, is just the fact that we're looking at a planet which can't actually sustain this can't actually sustain the society. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really impactful for me as well in terms of school, because going through school is so much about the future. It's so much about what you're going to do with your future. What's your career going to be? What's the world going to be like? And I was being taught all of this stuff. And at the same time, I was getting radicalized in like being part of like the school strikes for climate and that kind of stuff. And I was like going out on the street and learning these things about the actual, the real potential of societal collapse and ecosystem collapse and all these things, which are, I'm actually not very good at like climate science myself. Like I'm not the person to quote those kind of things, but yeah, we're in a really bad situation, and looking at the future made me feel like I was being lied to by every adult in my life, pretty much. And
because there was no acknowledgement that like it's going to be really, really hard to get to that future.
Well, just almost that there was like because it's not like school doesn't mention climate change, but it mentions it in a kind of like, I mean, I've also haven't been in school for the last 5 years, so I don't know what's changed in that time. But it's like there's a weird, sometimes there might even be acknowledgement of some facts, and there's acknowledgement of also like the violence and disrepair in the world right now, but it's also then like, but you should go and become, you know, you should go and have this individual career. You can go and do this, get enough money to buy a house, you'll have a pension. And it's like, who knows whether the financial system will exist in a way that means I can have a pension because of the way that the world is going. So it's, yeah, this weird like difference between what kind of future it's like was presented to me through school and what actually when I was using my own, when I was out in the rest of the world, what it looked like was coming.
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, thinking about kind of disrepair and futures, I guess, like, so our project Repair Ed is examining injustices in the school system in Bristol, looking at things with the theory of reparative futures of education. So you know, we're thinking about repair and reparatory justice, and can you kind of share whether you see what you're doing here with the Rise as linked to reparatory justice?
100%. And I think, you know, we've been privileged enough to spend time, both myself as an individual and also us as a project, working alongside and learning from the Pan-African movement a lot. And one of the places that I've grown a lot of my understanding of reparations and reparatory justice is in the like International Social Movement for African Reparations. And one of the key understandings that I've taken from that is that reparatory justice at its core is, it's about repairing the, it's about repairing the harms in the world. And that is so much broader than what we're like, you know, in the mainstream conversation about reparations, it's very much financial, it's very much like,
yeah, for sure,
you know, focused on kind of almost like, what's it called, like transactional, like oh, I did this to you, so I'll give you 20 quid kind of energy. Which actually, when you put it in that context, it's obvious that like if someone beats up your brother and then they're like, oh, but I'll give you 20 quid, like, to make it okay. And obviously that's a very simplified example, but I think this idea that repair is much more, I'm going to use a wanky word now, holistic, like, than a lot of the time, we're taught to see it as. So I think that's one thing where it's, like, really holistic, and that a really important part of that is, there's a concept called planet repairs, which comes out of the International Social Movement for African Reparations, largely, and it's about the idea of, like, you have to twin reparatory justice also with environmental justice and also with cognitive justice, and cognitive justice being, I mean, a massive concept, but a lot of it to do with, a lot of to do with exactly what we're talking about here, about the, I guess, undermining this idea of like, there's one truth, it's the right truth, it's the truth that you're taught in Western universities, it's and all other forms of knowledge, you know, whether that's indigenous or other community knowledges are on legitimate, and that also just the idea of like suppressing the truth in general. And there's a quote that Esther Cossey, who's one of the kind of leaders in the Ismail movement, is says is, education is preparation for reparations. And I think we we think about that a lot, and that, yeah, especially from people in the context that we're in, you know, in a kind of majority white rural town in the UK, that actually we're a really long way away from genuinely being part of a global family where we're all kind of united and fighting together.
Mm.
And so much of that is because, yeah, we've been miseducated into believing that we should all have this role of like, yeah, I'm going to live my individual life. And yeah, it sucks that other people don't have these opportunities, but like, go me. And, you know, that kind of like, yeah, lie of the white picket fence kind of idea. And so that, like, to undo that miseducation, amongst all the other things of it, obviously, like that, yeah, that education is preparation for that like the rest of the reparatory work. And it obviously can't be separate, because, you know, there's also people that like to talk loads and just sit in circles and feel good about themselves, and it has to be connected to other forms of action 100%, which is like really important to the work we do. But I think, yeah,
for sure. And I think it's really important to highlight that when we say like education is preparation, we're talking about education, not schooling.
Yeah.
And especially not schooling in the UK.
Uh-huh.
And I think too often we're kind of, we see those two things as totally synonymous.
Mm.
So when we talk about the power of education, people are like, yeah, that's great. That means we need to invest everything into schools.
Yeah.
But, you know, schools aren't education. Mm. There's so much that goes on
totally
more widely. I wondered if you could share like a couple of things, like maybe like moments of joy or connection or learning, which kind of exemplify what you do here at The Rise.
Mm, nice question. I think one of the things that we have had the most positive feedback on, and that I think like has been really impactful part of our work, is the kind of like educational culture that we have, like the kind of basically the vibe of the sessions and the spaces that we create. And I think it sounds a bit wishy-washy almost when you put it like that, but just the fact that most people's only experience, especially younger people, like their only experience with educational settings is in school.
Mm.
And for most people, that's like a really bad experience, basically, and it's a really negative experience. And I think that we managed to create spaces where we're genuinely inviting people to actually bring themselves, to bring their own ideas, to feel comfortable, to be curious, to get things wrong, to, you know, to do educations like in a way that's much more than just reading something from a book, I think is really, yeah, been really impactful. And I don't know, like I think an example of that is we've had some individuals who like come through this space and then they start using a different name, and whether that's like they start using either that's to do with gender, so it's someone who's like feeling comfortable to use a different name that's much more corresponds actually to their gender identity rather than what they've been forced to in the world, or people who have been using like anglicized names who then come back and use the names of their cultural background in the space. And I think that's kind of a funny example in some ways, but it feels like it highlights this thing of like people being able to be more themselves.
Yeah, for sure.
Rather than how they're squished into boxes in other places. And that's been really powerful when people are like, actually, no, call me this. And we're like,
yeah,
okay, cool.
That sense cool, of man. Not needing to comply, but being able to be really honest to themselves. That's really lovely. What kind of some of the other successes or sort of good things that happen here?
I think that having a physical space right now is a massive success in terms of really being able to give people a place that you can walk into and feels youth owned, but also feels very different to a classroom, feels like a youth center. And I think that that's been one of the massive successes, is being able to access this. And yeah, I think there's been a lot of journeys that lots of, you know, we've been in Stroud now for almost 5 years doing The Rise. And yeah, there's people that we met when they were 14 who have been coming along to our stuff, and we've all been on such a big journey together and learned a lot alongside each other. And I think that's been, yeah, you know, that's less of a tangible win than some other things I could pick, but I think that's feels really important.
But this space is great. So, like, for our listeners, it's I don't know Stroud very well, but it feels quite central. Mm-hmm. We're on a street with, you know, lots of shops, and then this is, you know, one of the buildings on that street. And I walked in and it just feels really, yeah, really welcoming, really friendly, really cozy.
Quite maximalist.
Yeah. There's lots of stuff everywhere, like posters, t-shirts, flyers, fairy lights, you know, but it's, yeah, it's a really, really lovely space. You know, you kind of, you feel straight away when you come in what kind of space it is. To me, it kind of feels similar maybe to somewhere like the Base Anarchist Centre in Bristol in Easton. You know, it's the same kind of vibe when you walk in.
Quite
you kind
DIY,
of
DIY.
Yeah, like... DIY, and you know what the space is about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, I was quite shocked that it was like just right here on, you know, a street in the middle of Stroud, like just down from like coffee shops and, you know, and all the other streets and all the other shops in the street. So, yeah, what are kind of the challenges with running Rise and, yeah, being here, maybe particularly in Stroud, but maybe in more generally?
Yeah, well, lots of challenges, but it's a not a easy environment to try and do things differently a lot of time, it feels like. I think one of the challenges has been resourcing ourselves is a massive challenge, like being able to do this work, like most of us. Of volunteers, we have like a need, we have some money that we're able to like give out to people who are part of the project in a kind of like needs first way, but no one's able to be paid at the moment, and there's not it's a lot of hard work that a lot of people are giving a lot to. And I think that's and all young people as well, largely, although we have a lot of support from older members of the community. And I think it's been a massive challenge to toe the line, not that it's necessarily a line, but like balance the kind of overtly political work that we're doing with also doing work that, yeah, like also still engaging with areas of the community that are either going to be actively like against that political work or people that just haven't come across it before, and there's different challenges in those different places. But, you know, we previously, for example, ran a campaign called School is a Crime Scene, and you know, within a month of us running that campaign, the schools were warning people in assemblies like not to come and get involved in our work, which obviously was the best advertising we possibly could have had. But I think that like those times when we've really fronted with something that sounds more radical, sounds more scary, there's been a lot less positive reaction from certain authorities, which sometimes we don't care because screw them, but sometimes that really matters because, you know, when if the council starts getting up on our backs or that kind of thing, it can make it much more difficult for us to do the work that we're trying to do as well. So I think things like that. And then specifically in Stroud as well, it's challenging because lots of young people leave. There's not enough jobs for people. People want to move to the city. The kind of Stroud to Bristol pipeline is very strong. And yeah, it feels like a lot of the time we kind of have people in their kind of early 20s that are like really getting their teeth into stuff, and then they're off. And that's obviously, people want to leave their hometown, and that is totally legitimate, but a lot of the time people are forced to, and there's also not enough here that is like drawing people here and bringing them back. So I think it's definitely like being in a rural setting is difficult in that sense as well.
Yeah. And who engages with the Rise? So I'm really interested to know whether like the young people who come here, are they young people who haven't attended school and who've been kind of in various unschooling or home educated setups? Or are they young people who've kind of been to school and have realised the harm?
It's really a mixture. I think it kind of depends which... We've got a lot of different strands of work, basically. And I think that the... Especially because we also do work nationally, and that brings in a kind of different... That's kind of more with people that are already like doing political organizing. In terms of locally, we've had quite a lot of the biggest, maybe like demographic, if you want to do that kind of thing, that we have through the door is like neurodivergent people. And I think there's a lot of, especially when we were doing the school is a crime scene work, and some of our other recent campaigns, a lot of people who are having a hard time at school. So a lot of people who are at or have been at mainstream school but having a hard time, for a lot of the time that's to do with like disability or gender or yeah, kind of things along those lines. We have a lot of young people coming into the space with those kind of experiences. Yeah, some people have dropped out of school, and then some, I think some of the other sessions, especially the more like intergenerational sessions we do, we definitely get more of the kind of young people that are in the like already kind of in like political stuff, or maybe they're kind of involved in kind of alternative things. There's quite a lot of like arts and music stuff that happens as well, so some of that crew as well come through. But yeah, it's also, it becomes an interesting thing to work out how to keep a space feeling like safe for certain people, especially people who don't have lots of other places that they feel like they can be safe or call their own, but without that, it then becoming like neat, like overly niche on just like a space that then just feels safe for certain people. So that's maybe also been one of the challenges that I would say we've definitely faced.
Yeah. And do you have, I mean, you talked about this a little bit with the assemblies, but how do schools engage with you? Like, do you get a lot of pushback from them, or are you kind of so separate from that setup that they don't really interact?
I think the most of the times we've had pushback is when we've like been actively provocative towards them. So I think it's generally like the schools don't engage with us that much. Yeah, there's been times when we've kind of pushed a bit and then we've had some negative reaction. We had one experience where there was one of the teacher strikes, and we went to the picket with like freshly baked cake and stuff, and got shouted away by some of the teachers there because they didn't. We were the only people that turned up to support on the picket, and we got shouted away. And that's, yeah, was an interesting experience. And not, you know, some of the teachers were interested to talk to us, but I think there's definitely tensions there. But also, yeah, a lot of the time we just don't engage. We've actually had like one student come and do work experience with us, and the school was just like, yeah, cool. So it's also, it really depends also on different departments and and that. And I think we also now have relationships with quite a lot of, you know, we've got a relationship with the MP, with lots of the councillors, which also, yeah, kind of slightly placates the tension a bit, I think.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm just reflecting on what you said about the striking teachers. So, like, even within that kind of politically active group of teachers, there's still maybe suspicion or, you know, pushback. And I guess, do you see any kind of overlap of, like, your ideas? Like, are there people working within schools who agree with you that school is harmful?
I mean, I think definitely. I think that we work with a lot of ex-teachers, so teachers that have left school. I think that in terms of teachers that are still within, I mean, I think there is massive overlap, because one of the things we were having in that conversation with this teacher who really didn't want to see us was, like, at the heart of it, we care about the same things a lot of the time, but it's a lot about approach, I think, that people find difficult, and I think we've sometimes been accused of being, like, yeah, too provocative, too, like, angry, too, I guess, like, not, you know, mincing words about things that people have then found hurtful when they feel like they're doing their best to do things better as well. And, you know, I think it's, yeah, sometimes people take what we say personally, and, yeah, I can understand why when you're, I mean, we're all trying to do things differently, right? And then for someone to say, but it's not worth it the way you're doing it, it's hurtful. Like, it's the same in the different ways around. And I also think, yeah, it's just a case of, like, you also have to, things reach different people differently. And the thing that mainly had really pissed that teacher off was that they'd read something we'd explicitly written for students. And so it wasn't very focused on compassion for teachers, because it was specifically speaking to a student experience.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I think that's something that we we struggle with in our work sometimes, that we're kind of trying to kind of overtly critique education as a political actor, like you said earlier, or you know, schools as systems. Institutions yeah. and systems, but without necessarily like directly criticizing the people who work within it, but encouraging them to kind of realize the ways in which they may have become institutionalized. And I know that was a massive learning thing for me when I came out of teaching. Just, you know, I wasn't uncritical of schooling when I was in schools, but when I came out, I realized just how institutionalized I'd become. And I think it's difficult sometimes to see that when you're in it and you're working so hard. And, you know, we do acknowledge that, like, teachers are working really hard and, you 100%. Know, doing their best.
Well, and sometimes doing above and beyond so many things that they should be expected to do,
Yeah, but when you're not, you know, when you're still working within a system, there has to come a moment maybe where you sort of question your own complicity. And I think that's really confronting for people, isn't it? And that's maybe why you get some of those, like, quite defensive reactions. But yeah, so what's next for The Rise? What are you currently working on or moving on to?
Well, we are continuing to try and run Reds as a kind of youth educational political centre in the heart of town, which has been a big learning curve. Like you said, it's very like central. It's a lot of work to manage a building as well as try and run all the other stuff that we do. And we've always had a bit of a torn, not like ideologically but like practically, between local work and national work. So that's one of the things. And then we're also doing more work building internationalist links, so kind of like working with communities in other parts of the world who are doing similar things, who, you know, are in different, very different situations. Some of them where like mainstream schooling is like still quite new in certain places, or different communities where they're like practicing local education and what, you know, we can be learning from each other there. So I think it's exciting, and we're just kind of continuing to try and like build up as an institution, try and have our you know, we've got a bit of a habit of like doing stuff and then not documenting it, like moving on from it, and then someone's like, oh, can I have that workshop plan? And I'm like, oh crap, sorry, we didn't write it down. So a bit of that, like, actually also I guess like putting stuff down on paper so that it doesn't just happen once and then not again.
Great, thank you. And let's move on to our final question now, which is the same for all guests on the podcast. What would a just education system look like to you?
I think the main thing for me is an education system that is supporting young people to solve the problems that they're facing and that their community is facing, and, you know, give people the tools, not just practical tools, like also like, yeah, like the critical thinking tools or the teamwork tools or the self-reflection tools to be able to face the challenges that they're presented with. I think a lot of the time in alternative education spaces, there's a lot of like conversation about what education should look like, where lots of people have done lots of incredible work and research on like, different ways that education can happen that is much more beautiful and treats young people like full human beings and all of this and that. And I think that's really important, and I also sometimes feel like it is outside of the context of right now, where we're not, in my opinion, in a situation where we can just focus on what would be ideal, but we also need to focus on what is needed to basically support the next generations to be prepared for the battles that are facing them in terms of, literally like the survival of like flourishing humans on this planet and fighting the powers that want to keep things the way they are. And I think it's like, so for me, really just education is really about how can we honestly prepare young people for the future they're facing in a way that is about intergenerational support. And I don't know, empowerment is a word that people use all the time, but empowerment to actually be the best version of themselves, and the best version of themselves as part of the community, not as kind of isolated individuals.
Great. Thank you so much.
No, you're welcome. Thank you. That was great.
Thank you for listening to the Repair Ed podcast. Please take a listen to our other episodes, and if you'd like to be a guest, get in touch. Our email can be found on our website, www.repair-ed.uk.